eKatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of eKatra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today we're focusing on a piece of history that honestly feels incredibly relevant right now. It's John M. Barry's huge work, The Great Influenza, the story of the deadliest pandemic in history.
Yeah, it really is. If you, the listener, want to get a handle on, you know, modern public health, why we do the things we do in a crisis, why scientists are racing to sequence genomes, and crucially, why political denial can be just so deadly, well, Barry's book is basically the essential text.
Right.
Our mission today isn't just about looking back at the sheer numbers, the death toll. It's about pulling out those timeless lessons the pandemic taught us. Lessons about leadership, about truth, and scientific integrity when things get really tough.
Absolutely. Barry makes this powerful case that the 1918 flu wasn't just, you know, a biological event, it was this fundamental stress test. It actually changed modern medicine forever, and it really exposed the dangers when truth gets sacrificed, maybe for morale or politics. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a blueprint for understanding how we respond to crises. And that's why, yeah, even over a century later, it feels so important to talk about. So let's talk about the author first, John M. Barry. He's a really distinguished historian known for chronicling these big disaster events. People might know his book, Rising Tide, about the Great Mississippi Flood of 1927.
Right. And what's key here is that he's not a virologist himself. Mm-hmm. He approaches this as almost like a systems analyst, but with deep historical rigor. He spent something like 7 years researching the Great Influenza.
Wow.
Yeah, digging through archives, talking to epidemiologists, reading old medical journals. And that background allows him to bridge these two worlds, the complex science, like the race, to figure out what was causing the illness, and the huge, often failing national policies happening at the same time.
So he connects the dots, basically.
There you go.
He shows that what happens in a lab, you know, a breakthrough or maybe a dead end, isn't separate from the real world. It connects directly to government decisions. And sometimes those decisions make things way worse.
Precisely. Which brings us right to the core argument of the book. Mm-hmm. Barry says the pandemic hit America, this really critical, kind of volatile moment. Medicine itself was in the middle of this huge shift.
Yeah.
It was moving away from being seen as an art, you know, based on tradition and who had the biggest reputation.
Yeah.
Towards becoming a proper evidence-based science.
Rigorous. Okay, so a positive change overall, you'd think.
Yes, huge progress was being made. Mm. But Barry argues it also created this maybe unintended consequence, a kind of medical hubris and overconfidence. Mm. And the book lays out how that catastrophe, the deadliest pandemic we know of, was made so much worse by failures in leadership and, really crucially, the deliberate suppression of truth, all happening under the pressure cooker of World War I.
Wow.
The way Barry structures the narrative is brilliant. He starts by setting the stage, telling us about this revolution in American medicine, these key figures, the warriors, he calls them, who are pushing for German-style research models, setting up places like Johns Hopkins.
Right.
Then he pivots to the virus itself emerging, this deadly H1N1 strain. He traces how it spread, and then, maybe most importantly, he analyzes how different cities responded and how those responses led to wildly different outcomes. Starkly different.
Okay, let's dig into that setup a bit. Parts one and two, the scientific revelation part.
Yeah.
You mentioned figures like William Welch, the dean of American medicine, right?
Yeah, him and Simon Flexner at the Rockefeller Institute. These guys were pushing hard. They insisted that American doctors had to stop just guessing or relying on old habits. They needed the scientific method.
They were disruptors then.
Absolutely necessary disruptors, yeah. They believed research, actual data, should be the authority, not just someone's reputation. But like you said, this necessary change maybe bred a bit of overconfidence.
Because they'd had successes.
Exactly. They'd just made huge strides against diseases like typhoid. So maybe they felt a bit too sure of themselves when this completely new invisible viral threat appeared.
And meanwhile, the virus itself, Barry calls it the swarm, was starting to bubble up. He traces it back, possibly, to Haskell County, Kansas, a rural spot.
Yeah, seems like the most likely origin. Before it jumped to these incredibly crowded military camps like Camp Funston. And you really can't overstate the role of World War I here. It was like pouring gasoline on a fire.
How so?
Well, think about it. Military mobilization. You've got masses of people crammed into barracks, training together, coming from all over the country. Then rapid troop movements, ships crossing the Atlantic. It created the perfect conditions for this virus, not just to spread, but critically, to mutate into that much deadlier second wave form.
So the global war literally fueled the global pandemic.
Absolutely. It became the engine driving it.
And this scientific tragedy, this biological one, was happening alongside a political tragedy. Barry calls it the tinderbox wartime America.
Yeah, the Wilson administration, especially through this thing called the Committee on Public Information, was basically waging war on any bad news.
To keep morale up for the war effort.
Exactly. They suppressed dissent, pushed heavy propaganda, demanded absolute unity. Truth was secondary to morale.
Which sounds dangerous when a health crisis hits.
Incredibly dangerous. Because this political decision made the country really vulnerable. The government had essentially trained the public to only expect reassuring news. So when this horrific flu arrived and people started dying in huge numbers, but officials kept saying, oh, it's just the grip or it's just the ordinary flu.
Trust evaporated.
Instantly.
Yeah.
Shattered. And you see the direct consequences of that in how different cities handled it. Barry contrasts them brilliantly. Let's start with the really tragic example, Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the cautionary tale.
Philadelphia is the absolute case study in putting politics before public health. The evidence was their medical officers were warning that the flu was spreading fast, especially in the Navy Yard. But the health director, Velmer Cruzan, he allowed this huge Liberty Lawn parade to go ahead in late September 1918.
Oh no.
Yeah. Massive crowds. And the result was immediate and horrifying. Barry writes that within 72 hours, basically every hospital bed in the city was full.
72 hours?
Yeah. And in just a few weeks, over 12,000 people died. City services just collapsed. They were digging mass graves. Philadelphia became this awful symbol of what happens when leaders deny reality. It's hard to even picture that level of breakdown happening so fast.
It really is. But then you contrast that with St. Louis.
Right. A completely different story. The health commissioner there, Max Starkloff, he looked at the data, the evidence coming in, and he acted decisively, even though he faced pressure from business leaders, politicians.
What did he do?
He prioritized the science. He implemented early, aggressive closures. Schools, theaters, churches, public gatherings shut down almost immediately.
Giving the virus fewer chances to spread.
Exactly. He basically slammed the door before the fire could really catch hold.
And did it work?
The numbers are stark. St. Louis had significantly lower death rates, often cited as maybe half the peak rate seen in Philadelphia. Starkloff's actions are proof. Quick, decisive intervention, based on evidence, implemented early, that's the most effective weapon against a new virus, even if it's politically unpopular at the time.
While all this is happening in the cities, the scientists are in the labs in what Barry calls the cauldron, just scrambling.
Frantically. They're trying to figure out what this invisible killer actually is. The main confusion, the central mystery, was whether it was a bacterium, specifically one called Pfeiffer's bacillus, which was the leading theory at the time, but wrong, or if it was something else, something smaller, unknown.
And they couldn't just look, right? The technology wasn't there?
Yeah. No, exactly. Electron microscopes that could actually visualize viruses were still decades away, so they were working blind, in a sense. Barry really highlights the painstaking work of people like Oswald Avery at Rockefeller. He methodically ruled out the known bacteria, doing really crucial groundwork, even though they couldn't pinpoint the actual virus back then.
So the scientific battle was intense, but the answer remained elusive during the pandemic itself.
That's right.
And then, after the wave subsided, after the worst was over, Barry describes this fascinating period he calls the collective amnesia.
Yeah, it's quite profound. This pandemic killed far more people globally than World War I did. Estimates range from 50 to 100 million people worldwide, yet society largely just chose to forget.
How is that possible?
It's complex. Barry notes that even President Wilson, who got dangerously ill with the flu during the Paris peace talks, never once publicly mentioned the pandemic afterwards. His silence kind of contributed to this public erasure.
It was too traumatic, too random.
Perhaps. It didn't fit the heroic narrative of the war. It was just this massive, terrifying, seemingly meaningless death. So it seems society just collectively hit delete. For decades, it was barely mentioned in history books. It's a powerful reminder that history isn't just what happened, it's also about what we choose to remember and why.
Until much later, when science finally caught up.
Right. The book sort of culminates decades later, in the late 1990s. Researchers like Jeffrey Taubenberger managed to get samples of preserved lung tissue from victims who'd been buried in Alaskan permafrost.
Wow.
And using modern techniques, they were actually able to sequence the genome of the 1918 virus, finally confirming it was that H1N1 strain.
So, 80 years later, the mystery was solved.
Yeah. A powerful end to that scientific thread. It vindicates the whole approach those early warriors were pushing for back in 1918. The truth eventually came out, thanks to that persistent scientific method. So let's try and pull together some of the big universal lessons from all this, because that's really where the value lies for us today.
Okay. The first one seems unavoidable. Truth and leadership. That stark contrast between St. Louis and Philadelphia just hammers it home. Denial, trying to downplay things, telling reassuring lies. It directly led to mass death.
It's unequivocal in Barry's analysis. Honest leadership that, as he puts it, makes whatever horror exists concrete, is the single most vital public health tool.
Because if people don't trust what they're being told,
then coordinated action becomes impossible.
Yeah.
If the authorities are lying to keep morale up, or for political reasons, the foundation of trust just crumbles.
Yeah.
And you need that trust for people to follow public health guidance.
Which connects to another theme, I think. The danger of certainty. It wasn't just political leaders. Some medical authorities were overly certain, too, clinging to that wrong theory about Pfeiffer's bacillus or insisting the flu was just ordinary. That false certainty was incredibly dangerous.
Absolutely. The scientists who actually made progress were the ones who could admit they didn't know everything, who embraced the uncertainty, and were willing to adapt as new evidence came in. That's the core of good science.
Yeah.
Right? Acknowledging ignorance. False certainty, whether scientific or political, is a huge vulnerability in a crisis.
And the third big one has to be social inequality. The book makes it painfully clear that the pandemic didn't hit everyone equally.
Not at all. It devastated poorer communities, marginalized groups, far more severely. Why? Because of existing problems. Inadequate housing, poor nutrition, lack of access to decent health care.
So the virus didn't create those divisions?
No, it just exploited the cracks that were already there in society. Deep fissures. It's a harsh lesson. Any major crisis is going to magnify existing injustices and hit the most vulnerable people the hardest.
Barry's writing itself is so impactful. He has these lines that just cut right to the heart of the matter. We should share a few key ideas.
Definitely. The first one really sums up his take on the medical establishment of the time. The single most important thing to remember about the 1918 influenza pandemic is that it was not a medical disaster. It was a disaster of medical hubris.
Ugh. That's blunt. It says the problem wasn't a lack of smart people. It was an attitude problem. Overconfidence.
Right. Which ties into his point about how science should work. Science requires that one embrace uncertainty, acknowledge ignorance, and accept that answers change as new evidence emerges. It highlights the humility needed.
And for leaders dealing with a crisis, he sets this incredibly high bar for honesty. A leader must distort nothing. Make whatever horror exists concrete.
Yeah, transparency isn't optional. It's fundamental to earning trust, which you absolutely need to get people to act together effectively.
And finally, just capturing that utter devastation, the reason for the later amnesia, perhaps. Fear was a solvent, dissolving the bonds of society, of family, of love itself.
Chilling. It reminds you the attack isn't just physical. It rips apart the social fabric, the things that hold us together.
So these aren't just historical observations. They feel like they have real practical applications for us now.
Absolutely. For public health preparedness, that St. Louis versus Philadelphia story is the clearest lesson you could ask for. It shows why we need robust local health systems ready to act. And why early, decisive actions like closures, limiting gatherings, what we now call non-pharmaceutical interventions, are crucial. You have to act before it gets out of control. Hesitation costs lives.
Right. Time lost is lives lost.
And for anyone in any kind of leadership role, business, community, government, whatever, this book is a powerful lesson. Communicate honestly, especially about uncertainty. Prioritize evidence, even when it's politically inconvenient. And be flexible. Be ready to change your strategy when the facts change. Don't just double down on something that isn't working.
And for all of us, just as citizens trying to navigate information.
I think it underscores the importance of media and information literacy. Barry shows the catastrophic impact of government suppression and propaganda back then. For us today, it means we need to be really critical consumers of information. Learn to spot motivated reasoning. Distinguish evidence-based reporting from spin or false certainty. We need to be able to trust reliable sources.
Yeah. Thinking back on it all, what really strikes me is that tension. You have this amazing scientific revolution happening, this push towards rigor and evidence. And yet it coincides with this unbelievable catastrophe, followed by this profound collective forgetting, the sheer speed of social breakdown in a place like Philadelphia, and then the decades of silence. It's staggering. It speaks to something deep about how societies cope or fail to cope with overwhelming trauma.
I agree. And for me, the final takeaway, the most powerful lesson Barry leaves us with, circles back to that idea of trust. In a major crisis, trust is the single most valuable resource, more precious than masks or hospital beds or even vaccines eventually.
Because without it,
everything else fails. The erosion of trust in institutions, in science, in each other is ultimately more dangerous than the pathogen itself. So effective crisis management needs that blend. Intellectual humility, acknowledging what you don't know, coupled with decisive action based on the best evidence you do have, no matter the political heat. That's the tightrope leaders have to walk. And it's the standard we should demand.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.